This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Today, we're going to revisit the New Deal and find out more about a program I've always been interested in but never really got around to studying before. It's the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps. In the process, we may, I hope, get to talk about Barack Obama and why he hasn't pushed more of a New Deal agenda. My guest this week is Neil Marr, Associate Professor of History at Rutgers and author of Nature's New Deal. Neil Marr, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thanks for having me.
You're still at Rutgers, right?
It's Rutgers and the New Jersey Institute of Technology. It's a federated department.
So is that different than Rutgers itself?
No, it's two schools that have a history department together.
Okay. Let's start with a little background on you and how you got interested in the environment in the first place.
Sure. I went to a college in a very rural place up in New Hampshire and got into the outdoors then, and then was a history major as well. So I wanted to combine that love of the outdoors with, you know, studying the past. So it was a perfect way to get into that.
What was the college?
Dartmouth College up
in
Hanover.
And did you study environmental stuff there?
I was a history major, but I was in the outing club and sort of got into the outdoors. So to combine the intellectual with the sort of personal was wonderful.
And you talk in the intro to Nature's New Deal about your dad exposing you to a CCC site. What was that about?
Sure. We lived in the Riverdale section of New York, which is in the Bronx, and he would take us out on weekends up the Hudson to a place called Bear Mountain State Park. And it turns out that during the New Deal period, there were about a dozen CCC camps in the park, and they basically created all the trails and a lot of the visitor centers that I was walking on as a child. So it just turned out that years later, I revisited that as a scholar, which was pretty wonderful.
And I haven't, I'm not a historian, and I haven't surveyed the literature on the CCC. Have there been a lot of books on the CCC, or was this, were you covering pretty new ground?
There had been a political history, sort of an administrative history written on the Corps that sort of explained how it was created and how it ran in the 60s. And then there have been a lot of sort of memories or reminiscences from CCC enrollees. But there had not really been a historical, analysis of the program, especially not with respect to how it changed the environment of the country and also how it changed the politics. So I think bringing that environmental history and the political history together was something new for me.
Yeah, I see that you situate it to both in the context of the environmental movement, conservation movement, but also in political context, which I hope we'll get around to. But tell me first about FDR and how he came up with the idea.
Sure.
If he actually came up with it.
He did. He was extremely involved in the conservation movement as a young man. He took over running the estate that his family owned, Springwood, up in Hyde Park, New York, and he very early realized that it had a soil erosion problem. He then, to solve that, went on and planted between 20 and 50,000 trees a year. He had planted, he didn't do them himself, in the 1920s. So hundreds of thousands of trees to stop the soil erosion on his property. He then became a senator, state senator, and governor of New York, where he also became involved in conservation with the Adirondack Forest Preserve, the New York Game Commission, and then took that interest with him to the White House. But at the same time, he was also very much involved in the Boy Scout movement of Greater New York and getting these young boys in New York City, getting them out of the city and moving them up to these camps in the summer, some of which were at Bear Mountain State Park, where I went with my father. And it was that interest in conserving the natural resources on his home estate and also conserving these human resources, which were these young boys in New York City, that he brought together in the CCC when he became president.
It's interesting because some of the relief programs that he started in the New Deal were also prefigured in some of the things he did as governor, because I think a common impression of FDR is he came in, he didn't have that political perspective, he was forced to by circumstance, and then he had some good left-wing advisors and went that way. But really he had done some of that early formation as a young politician and as governor.
Absolutely. He was one of the first governors in New York State to do a statewide soil survey, going into every county and having a survey done of the soil fertility in those counties. And that then led to the creation of the Soil Conservation Service, and this is the 75th anniversary of that program.
Wow. And give us a sense of the scale of the CCC.
Sure. There were over... let me think here. There were over 2 million young men who joined the Corps. It lasted for 9 years, from 1933 to 1942. They changed through their work an area that's larger than the state of California. They planted over 2 billion trees.
That's a billion with a B.
Billion with a B. Half the trees ever planted in U.S. history.
Really?
Yeah. So they completely, radically transformed the American landscape, but I argue in the book that they also transformed American politics.
Well, how did they transform American politics?
Well, first of all, Franklin Roosevelt was a very savvy politician. He was able to use conservation in general and the CCC in particular to sort of forge his liberal New Deal coalition. So he would place these CCC camps in certain areas, certain regions where he needed support, because these camps were very, very good economically for local communities. So he would use these as a tool, a political tool, to reward certain politicians and to punish other politicians. It was also a very good program because local people loved it, because the economics were very good. It brought money into these local communities. The young men in the program, often urban immigrants, loved the program. So it brought together these very diverse groups of people behind this sort of conservation umbrella that allowed him to create this New Deal coalition.
You write in the book, and you quote sources saying that the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps, was the most popular program of the New Deal. I hadn't realized that. Is that obvious?
There were Gallup polls back in the 30s that took these sort of the public mood, and the CCC always came out near the top, if not at the top. And this was part of the argument that I try to make, is that because of this popularity, there became sort of a conservation craze all over the United States. There were schools that created curriculums around conservation. There were women's groups that began tree planting contests. And this popularity made people rethink what conservation was, and they began to debate what conservation was. And that debate, I argue, shifted the actual meaning of conservation towards what we now think of as environmentalism.
Speaking with Neil Maher, he's the author of a fascinating new book called Nature's New Deal. And politically, it also helped FDR get some of his other programs through, because this one started early on in the 100 days, mm-hmm, right?
Correct.
And then it's a success, it's almost instant success, allowed him to push other things later on, like Social Security, for instance, mm-hmm. Correct?
Correct. And the Soil Conservation Service, the Tennessee Valley Authority, the Agricultural Adjustment Administration, he really was able to use the CCC to push through a lot of these other conservation programs, but also a lot of his other New Deal programs, because it was so popular.
Now, was there any resentment early on or fear, especially given that some of these young men, they were all young men, I hadn't realized that it was stipulated that they were, 16 to 25 or 18 mm-hmm. to 25?
Right.
Coming to communities, who are these, there's always xenophobia in this, who are these people? Mm-hmm. They're young, they're going to go drinking, they're going to go carousing. Was there that kind of questioning going on at the beginning?
Absolutely. People were very, very fearful. They thought of these young men as urban people, urban youths, which is not the case. There was actually 50% urban and 50% rural. But this fear quickly went away when these local communities realized how much money was pouring in through these camps into local communities, about $5,000 a month going from these camps into local communities. So it made a big difference economically for these towns. Interestingly, there was more protest in the north when an African-American camp moved nearby than in the south, because the camps were segregated. I think Southerners were more accustomed to having African-Americans nearby.
So tell me more about that incident. Where was that camp?
There were many camps in the north where these protests occurred. And in my research, I just realized very quickly that there were many more protests in the northern regions than in the south.
And did they get really ugly?
No. If the protests continued, they would move the camp. But in general, once the economy started flowing between the camp and the community, locals pretty much came on board with having the camp nearby.
You mentioned Neil Maher a little bit earlier, that the Civilian Conservation Corps, the CCC, really changed the tenor of debate about what conservation is, what environmentalism is. Bring me through a little bit of that. One controversy, typical controversy within the environmental movement going back to Teddy Roosevelt's day, is this the preservationist versus the conservationist.
Correct. At first, everyone was really on board with supporting the CCC, but then there were certain people who began to realize that the Corps was doing perhaps maybe too much work in these national parks and state parks and national forests, building roads, for instance, creating too many hiking trails and visitor centers. And there were people who began to worry that this work was actually destroying the wilderness quality of some of these areas. Bob Marshall and Aldo Leopold are two people, very well-known conservationists, who began to criticize the Corps publicly for doing too much work. And I argue that that debate created sort of a national dialogue over what is conservation. Is conservation just about natural resources, timber, soil, and water? Or is it about things like outdoor recreation and wilderness and maybe ecological balance?
On the ecological balance side, I mean, Aldo Leopold was saying toward the end that the CCC was bringing in non-native trees and planting them all in straight rows, and this was going to disturb the ecological balance.
Exactly, and other things like draining swamps for mosquito control, certain types of projects that were, there were a lot of instances of building roads in national forests, and then those roads would erode down and destroy streams nearby. I mean, he was one of the first people, Aldo Leopold was one of the first people to lodge an ecological critique of the Corps.
But did that critique prevail, or was that still going on toward the end of the CCC?
The Corps tried to adjust and did adjust. They stopped planting certain species. They tried to plant more native species. But what the important part is that the debate that that arose because of this dialogue is what shifted people's perceptions from thinking of conservation as a very narrow movement around natural resources to something that was more expansive and broadened to involve ecology and wilderness.
Speaking with Neil Maher, he's the author of Nature's New Deal. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor at the Progressive Magazine. You're listening to Progressive Radio. You also mentioned the tension between preservation and recreation. And how did that play out? I mean, the idea that you should make these wilderness areas accessible to people at the same time when it gets accessible and you put roads in, you put cabins in, you put lodges in, it becomes less pristine.
Right. I mean, it's a tough situation that was going on because the CCC work in creating all these state parks and national parks were allowing many, many people out there who had never been outside in the wild to get access to those places. So on one level, the Corps' work in these state parks and national parks was, in a sense, democratizing this experience, this outdoor experience. And I argue that, in turn, helped to democratize conservation. Conservation had been a very, very elite movement in the Progressive era. Professional businessmen who were involved in resource extraction or scientists, a lot of common people didn't know about it. The Corps brought a lot of those local people into the fold, into the conservationist fold. So it democratized it, made it more grassroots, which I think is very important.
And that had a ripple effect afterwards, because these people then, when the CCC ended, they went and continued the interest in and campaigning for environmental issues.
Right. Many of the young enrollees who were in the Corps went on to form their own environmental organizations or recreation organizations. And also, the creation of this recreational landscape. I mean, 800 state parks. Almost every national park in the country that you go to has visitor centers that were built by the CCC or hiking trails. That's a lasting impact that allows outdoor recreationists to experience the outdoors in ways that push them towards an environmental ethic.
And this is something we don't realize when we're going to a state park to picnic on a holiday or to camp out in the fall or in the spring or any season, and we're bringing our family there or we're taking our hobbyists there. I'm a bird watcher. I go to state parks, county parks all the time. And we don't recognize that we're there because of FDR's CCC. We're there because of the New Deal. We're there because of a government program that's preserved this and made it accessible to us. And, you know, in this day and age of less and less government, I mean, ultimately people are saying, you know, forget about state parks, you know, forget about your county parks, and let's sell everything off. And that really erases the great work that the Civilian Conservation Corps did and FDR did, but also it erases the whole idea that there's a commons, mm-hmm. that there's something that the people of the United States as a community have here to enjoy and to preserve.
I absolutely agree. And, you know, the interesting part is that the Corps also worked not just on public land, but on private land as well. In Wisconsin, for instance, or in many farming regions around the country, the Soil Conservation Service would create these soil demonstration areas. And the Corps would do the work to transform these farms into sort of demonstrations of soil and water conservation. And the idea was that although it was private land, because these were demonstrating to other farmers that the correct conservation techniques, it was in the public interest. So Franklin Roosevelt was very aware of using private land, but in a public way.
And the farmers participated in this, in the Wisconsin illustration that you give, and also out in the Dust Bowl, where it was crucial to do some soil conservation.
Absolutely. They were asked to sign what were called cooperative agreements, where they would work with the Soil Conservation Service and the CCC enrollees to transform their farms. Contour plowing, strip cropping, terracing, and it worked. Agricultural production went up on these farms dramatically.
I mean, do they resist it? I mean, a farmer is just kind of stereotypically, you know, the most independent person, you know, government, stay away, I can handle my land. How did they wrestle with that?
It's a great question, because at first, many of the farmers, especially in places like the Dust Bowl, were very resistant to the government coming in. Once they saw the changes in their fields, and those changes transferred into changes in their bank accounts, right? More crops and more money. They began to be converts of conservation, and then actually took action to keep the federal government involved. They created soil conservation districts that would allow the Soil Conservation Service to continue to be involved in their communities long after Franklin Roosevelt was gone. And many of them actually began to vote Democratic. Mm-hmm. So there was a political shift going on.
And part of the reason they were amenable to this at the beginning, even before it helped their bank accounts, is that they were desperate at the time.
Exactly.
One interesting thing about the Civilian Conservation Corps is the argument that Roosevelt made for it toward the end as a kind of military training ground.
Yeah. When the Corps was first created, there were many people who were worried that the Corps would be used as a means of militarizing America's youth. And this is because Germany had a CCC-like program at the time, and they were using it in a very militaristic way. So in the beginning, the Corps was created, and the Army was only allowed to be responsible for these young men while they were in camp. When they left the camp and did their work, it was the Department of Interior and the Department of Agriculture that oversaw the young men. Later, as the New Deal wore on and World War II loomed, Franklin Roosevelt began to make the argument that we could use the Corps for military preparedness. And many of the jobs, the work the CCC did shifted. They went into the Pacific Northwest and into the forest to try to look for Japanese bombardments to create fires in the Northwest. They tried to work on military bases. And Franklin Roosevelt tried to save the Corps by arguing that it could help. And it didn't work. They shut it down.
And why did it get shut down, since it was such a popular program?
I think two reasons. First of all, was sheer money. A lot of the money was going into the war. But also, a lot of the young CCC enrollees were leaving the Corps and actually joining the military. Over 90% of CCC enrollees entered the military for World War II.
So what year did it end then?
42.
Okay, so the war was on then, and people were just signing up.
Right.
A lot of your argument in Nature's New Deal, Neil Maher, is about the positive ripple effect that the CCC has had. Tell a little bit about that. It had a ripple effect with other lower-level government agencies, not federal.
You mean after?
Yeah, after it was over.
For instance, there are many, many states right now, I think about a dozen states out there, who have state conservation corps, the most sort of developed being California. So the CCC lived on that level. And then there are also many, many local groups that continue to plant trees like the Corps, local groups that have, work projects in local parks, that sort of thing. So it lived on in that way. But it's also lived on internationally. I mean, there's an Afghan Conservation Corps right now, which is very strange.
And the U.S. is funding, I bet.
Yes, exactly. And even right now, Brazil is beginning sort of a new and improved CCC that is very interesting, actually.
Well, tell me a little bit about
sure.
that. What's that doing?
The Brazilian government and local governments and also some businesses have teamed up with the Nature Conservancy. And what they've done is they want to plant a billion trees in what they call their Atlantic Forest in Brazil. And they're going to do this by looking back to the CCC and hiring unemployed people, but they're doing it with a new twist. Rather than just having taxpayer money pay for the program, they're actually going to get carbon vouchers from the international carbon market when they plant these trees, and also get water payments for people who are in the areas who are going to benefit from the tree plantings. And they're going to use that money to pay for the program. So it's basically using the market to create and pay for a new and improved CCC. It's just an incredible program, I think, and something that we could do here.
So it's been a model internationally. It's been a model at state and county levels. But mostly it has a kind of bygone feel to it. When you talk about the CCC, people just think it's just FDR. It ended whenever the New Deal ended and the war started, and it's a relic. And yet, I think it could have been or could still be a model for some things that we could do in this country, and that Obama could have used it as a model. One thing, you know, why do you think he's not done a more New Deal approach? Let's start there.
I think it's interesting. When he first came into office, he was talking about sort of putting Americans back to work, and he specifically referenced Eisenhower's highway project, which I found so interesting because he consciously avoided referencing Franklin Roosevelt, which is the person you would think of first. And I think it's because he's frightened about being tagged as a left winger. And this is what's happening now to him. I mean, you know, he's being tagged as a communist or a socialist when he's so far from being that.
He was going to be tagged that no matter what he
exactly,
did. That
exactly.
That was the thing that he seemed to forget. And if he had understood that at the beginning, I mean, he could have talked more about FDR. He could have talked more about conservation. I mean, the highway example is such a weird one because it was so destructive environmentally.
Exactly. And it was for military. It was to prepare us for, you know, for a military movement of troops and munitions and things. I just think that he also could have used the New Deal, but used it in a new way. He could have argued that there's a way we could think about the New Deal, but update it for the 21st century in the same way that Brazil is doing it. In other words, think about the market more, maybe. In other words, you know, to appease those people who are so against returning to that past.
Or he could have done the old style.
I agree.
I mean, Bernie Sanders talks about that, you know, putting, 10 million solar panels on buildings around the country. I mean, he could have hired the unemployed.
Right.
The EPA could have hired the unemployed.
I mean, why couldn't we hire young people? And in this case, it would be young men and young women, because young women could not join the Corps. Why couldn't we hire them to go plant windmills in the former Dust Bowl, or solar panels across the Sun Belt, or biodiesel fuels across the agricultural regions of this country? I don't know, and we'd be training those young people in green technology, which is going to be a booming industry and a booming sector of the economy. It just makes total sense.
Yeah, it just seems like a missed opportunity, Neil Maher. But on the other hand, I think part of the missed opportunity was a failure to make the ideological case. The ideological case that big government can do big things that help people in a huge way. And he's so reluctant to talk about that. I heard him in Madison, Wisconsin recently give a talk where he said, I didn't become president to be a big government president. I never had any intention of doing that. And then essentially I was handed this, you know, mess on a plate, and the only thing we could do was ramp up big government for a little bit, but I want to ramp it down as soon as I can. That's why I'm for a balanced budget, and on and on and on. I mean, that's a confusing case to make to the American people. It concedes on one level that he is a big government president, and on the other, he said, you know, I really don't want to do this. I'm not going to do it for long. And for those of us who think that we need a more powerful government role, A, to protect the environment, B, to put people to work, and C, to act as a cushion against corporate predations, that's just not going to make it. Mm-hmm. And the argument on the other side is so clear. Big government's wrong every step of the way, except, you know,
I mean, the irony is that during the 30s, Franklin Roosevelt promoted big government. People supported it because it was a way that they could get through. I mean, we sort of know that the New Deal did not bring us out of the Great Depression. World War II did. On pure economics. But what the New Deal did, what big government did, was it gave people hope and gave them a safety net to get through. I mean, the number of people who I read their papers or even did oral interviews with people, the way they felt about Franklin Roosevelt and Eleanor Roosevelt actually personally taking care of them, I mean, we don't feel that now. And that's partly because back then there was this idea of the government taking care of you and being large enough to do that.
I don't know, in any of your oral histories that you've read, Neil Maher, came through with us, but I heard stories when I did some reading on the 1930s that a lot of people would have two pictures in their home. One would be of Jesus, the other would be of FDR.
Exactly. I heard the same thing.
And that is that's astonishing. We don't have that. I mean, I'm not for hero worship either.
Right.
But that gives you a sense of the hope he gave. And let's just kick around this question as to whether or what effect the New Deal had on the Great Depression, because a lot of times you hear right-wingers say it had no effect. And the only thing that got us out was World War II. Of course, World War II is a government program.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And it was government spending that ended the Great Depression. So that argument kind of, when they use it, is self-contradictory at the outside. But starting when he came in, there was 25% unemployment. And then he started the New Deal in 33, and the unemployment level fell consistently until 1937, I think down to 17% or 15%. Mm-hmm. And then in 1937, he caved in to the business interests who say, we got to go back to a balanced budget.
Yep.
And boom, right away, there was another double dip.
Yep.
and the numbers went up. So, but that's an argument that a lot of people don't know, and conservatives play on that ignorance, mm-hmm. and say it just did nothing.
Exactly.
Basically. Just